Make sure we're recording this.
And hit record on the old stream. Mute you, you, and you. 3, 2, 1. Technorama episode 329 for December 21st, 2011. Who's been naughty?
Comes now the feature attraction of the evening.
This show is a proud member of Friends in Tech at friendsintech.com.
That one just sounds weird because it cuts off right there. Ready for da-da-da.
Good morning, folks. This is your captain speaking.
Technorama.
Remember when?
Technorama.
On this day in tech history.
Tech.
And now, the news.
Tech.
What the chuck?
Technorama.
Welcome to Blockhead Video.
Hey, Julie hasn't had a chance to sit on Santa's lap yet. Where is he?
Over there, in the media corner.
Oh, oh, oh. Technorama.
Hold my beer and watch this.
Unfasten your seatbelts to disregard all safety rules. Here your flight crew, Chuck and Craig.
Welcome to Technorama for December 21st, 2011. This is a show that takes a lighthearted look at tech, science, sci-fi, and all things geek. If this is your first time listening to Technorama, thank you for joining us. If you're a returning listener, welcome back. We appreciate you giving us your time. I am Chuck Tomasi with my lovely daughter, Julie. How are you, Julie?
Christmas-tastic.
Christmas-tastic. I think you've been hanging around Craig too much. Speaking of which, Craig is out there as well. How are you, Craig?
I'm all cringly inside.
Sounds like you need to go take a shower, dude.
Yeah.
Is that cringly on the outside or cringly on the inside?
All cringly on the inside.
Delicious Racine Kringles made with all the freshest ingredients
that's
available.
That's elf speak for warm and fuzzy.
Elf speak?
Yeah, I speak elf.
Let's hear some.
I want to be a dentist.
Very funny.
I want to be a dentist. There you go. Is that a better one?
Hermie wants to be a dentist.
Yeah, what's wrong with that?
We have dolls that eat, chew, walk, talk, wet their pants, and cry mama.
We can give them a nice set of teeth.
Oh, dear, we better take a look at this bicuspid. Anyway, let's get on with the show for what it's worth. Coming in this episode of Technorama, we have Do You Know What's in Your Mountain Dew? Ew. One of the original video games turns 40 and a few things for your virtual podcast stocking coming up after this.
Technorama presents Real Geeks of Genius.
Real Geeks of Genius.
Today, we salute you, Mr. Memorabilia Collector Guy.
Mr. Memorabilia Collector Guy.
One man's trash is another man's treasure. Digging through mountains of stuff to find that little gem. You can work eBay like a stripper when the boys are on shore leave.
Shake your money maker!
And you bet your parents upstairs are proud.
Mom, I'll take the trash out in 15 minutes.
So here's to you, Mr. Memorabilia Collector Guy, for all you do.
Mr. Memorabilia Collector Guy.
Brought to you by Technorama, who reminds you to geek responsibly at www.chuckchat.com.
You're listening to Chuck and Craig with Technorama. Did I say that right? Where's my money? You say you give me $10. Now get out of here.
That music always reminds me of Christmas for some reason. I don't know why 8-bit music does that. Oh, because we were playing an 8-bit Christmas music before the show started.
Oh, yeah.
Chat room loved it. We had that.
You can fire up that Commodore 64 Christmas.
Right. Yeah, demo. There's the whole website out to that. Every Sunday night we are here live and we have a live chat room and a live webcam going on. If you want to join us, or you can consume this in the standard traditional podcast form days, weeks, or months later.
Yeah, when you consume it like this.
Just like that.
No, you're good, Chuck. Wait a minute. It's like.
What is thy bidding, my master?
Thy bidding is we're going to give a shout out to the chat room. We have several people there in their elf costumes and Santa and whatever else can be imaginative. We have AD Nightmare Before Christmas, Ben Vaughn, C Tree, Claudio M, Dandy Man, Dentist Elf Craig, Gru, Jingle Bell Julie, Marvy the Snowman, PC Stocking, Tim the Red-Nosed Reindeer, and ZML 2008. I think it's time he upgraded to ZML 2011 because ZML 2012 is coming out next week.
Oh no, it's ZML 3000 now. They changed their naming scheme.
ZML XP.
Yeah, that one.
XP 7.
This is ZML Vista. Yeah. ZML Lion. Turning to the birthday calendar. That it's time we get the new birthday calendar. We better call our Technorama insurance man.
Yeah. Call the office supply department and get us one of those ones that stick on the wall. One of those huge ones.
Check the supply cabinet. We might have something there. It's the end of the year. It's time for a new birthday calendar. But until then, we have James Ballard, our AKA Carrick Sindrew on the 21st. 22nd, we have two birthdays, Bo Pace and Luke Chuckstalker Smith.
Wait, that's not Luke.
No. Luke Smith.
No! Sorry.
23rd is Richard Green. 24th, Mad Boom, and Christmas Day, Joel Parks, Agrojagama. Happy birthday to all you people, and if it's your birthday and you're not in the birthday calendar, I know a few people added theirs this week. Head on over to chuckchat.com/wiki. We'd love to give you a shout-out at the proper time of year.
By the way, I feel bad for Joel there.
Why is that?
Well, who wants their birthday on the 25th of Christmas?
Celebrate it whenever you want. Have an unbirthday in July.
Hey, I brought your Christmas present, and just count it as your birthday present, too.
We have some feedback here, dude.
Wow. We do.
Oh, yeah. Hey, it's been a while since we sang this song.
Here we go.
Letters. Oh, we get letters. We get your letters every day. Mailman, mailman, mail today. Reach right in and pull one out. Oh, letters. I love those letters.
You know what? Just to be backwards, let's do the email before the email this time.
Remind
me to come back and do that.
You're getting funky with it.
We have an email from David regarding fixing his Christmas lights. He said he had a Santa display and there were some Christmas lights that went down like a runway. I'm going to paraphrase because this is like a 20-minute email to read out verbatim. Long story short, he had Christmas lights that were supposed to be a runway. It says, Santa, land here. So it was like,
nice.
You can land on the... But the lights went out. He was trying to fix them, and poof, they all went out. So
quick, we need to save Christmas.
He took his college course. He was referring to your goal a week or two ago about wanting to do like a new thing every month, and electronics being one of them.
Yeah.
So he said, you know what? I'm going to tell him what I did. He took his Christmas lights, and using his college electronics education, he went and bought a timer chip. And a couple other things, and was able to fix them so that they fired in series, because before they were firing kind of randomly and then they just completely didn't work at all.
Okay.
So he got them to work so that it's a Santa land here and it looks like a runway where it goes blink, 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 you know, kind of in succession.
Yeah.
And he said it was actually pretty darn simple once you get the hang of it. So that was a long story made very short, but kudos to David for fixing his Christmas lights and making them do what they were supposed to do in the first place, because they didn't.
Well, did he include a YouTube link or video or picture?
Now you're going to make me look. I'll go look while we're playing the voicemail in a little bit.
Okay. If you didn't, I'd like to see it.
We also have an email from Amber regarding cell phones on airplanes. We were talking about this. Do you actually shut it all the way off, or do you just put it on mute or airplane mode, or what do you do during takeoff and landing? And she says, I used to turn the phone off completely when they would tell you to, until the power button stopped working on my Nexus One. So okay. Now I just put it in airplane mode. Usually I need my phone when I land, and I can't always get to my power cable to trick the phone into turning on right away. Once I get a phone with a working power button, I will probably go back to turning off my phone. Signed, Amber. And then she has a PS that says, I know the voices aren't real, but they come up with some really great ideas.
Don't they?
I wonder if she's talking about our voices.
Yeah.
I just, what does airplane mode actually do?
It turns off the radios, so you're not transmitting.
Okay.
Bluetooth.
So your phone 3G, would essentially be an iPod.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
You can still listen to like music and look at pictures and things, but it's powered up, but it's not transmitting any signals, theoretically.
That makes sense.
I don't see a problem with that. But then I've heard the argument a million times. You don't want to be the guy that caused the plane to crash.
Right.
So
that's what Thomas's argument was.
Yeah. So I'm like, that's right. I think he said it as well. I've heard so many other people say it, but
sort of thinking that guy.
You don't want to be that guy.
Right. You'll go down in history like the underwear bomber.
I'm in aviation history just for the wrong reasons.
Right.
Yeah.
You'll go down in history.
Like a tail of a hun.
What was that? Harris and some other kids were singing, "You'll go down in history like Osama."
Oh, that's like, been updated. There you go.
Since the Mongols invaded China.
Yeah. For Pete's sake, Chuck, keep up.
Wow, I got to get some new news feeds. We have some voicemail.
And now another message from Will the Computer Guy.
More accurately, another 3 voicemail.
Hey, Chuck and Craig, it's Will the Computer Guy. It's funny, I went through my podcast today and I just kind of put it on a random start. I'm listening to you guys, and all of a sudden here, it's another voicemail from Will, the computer guy. So I had to call. What's going on?
What's up, buddy?
Christmas here, and don't have any tech-related stuff, but we're going to be driving to the folks in Colorado, and hopefully my Android phone and the GPS will get me there. It's not the AAA triptych, Will. Anyway, just want to say hi after I heard that. I haven't talked to you guys in a while, and all is good out here at the nut processing plant. And working nights now, helping our people over in Belgium. So, take care, guys. Catch you later. Look forward to more. Bye.
I always think the nut processing plant is a metaphor for something.
Yeah, he's a nut.
There are a lot of nuts in California, but I digress.
It's the land of fruits and nuts.
And flakes. Oh, wait. Next.
Hey, it's Will again, the computer guy. Used to have my amateur radio license, KF6BCE, but I accidentally let it expire. I knew I needed to renew it, but I didn't. And I actually got the Tech Plus, which was the technician bands plus the core, Morse code enhancement. So I would have been able to transmit on Morse code as well as on the regular HF bands. And I have my 2-meter radio that I would plug in my car and drive around and to work it back. So yeah, I'm going to get my ticket back again, but it's kind of hard to find a class around. The closest test is about 3.5 to 4.5 hours away. So hey, if you guys need any help, let me know. It's not hard. There's lots of study aids out there. Check it out. Later.
There you go, Craig.
Yeah. You know, I know, in case you missed it on the show, we had somebody write in and say that they got rid of the more Morse code requirement.
Yeah, they don't need a requirement. Yep.
So,
Number 3.
Hey, it's Will the Computer Guy. I just was listening to the Chuck and Thomas episode of Technorama.
Chuck and Thomas.
Wanted to weigh in on the airplane and electronic devices. And I used to fly in the company plane. I asked the pilot about that. You know, why do they ask you to turn off the cell phones and electronics? Back in the day, it used to be because it would bother all the cell phone towers. You know, your phone is jumping between the ball. But he said, like what MythBusters said, it's shielded enough that you don't want to, that you know, it's not going to cause any problems. So I hadn't been turning them off. But now with Thomas's little insight there, you know, I don't want to be the guy that brings down the plane. So
that's right.
I probably will be turning it off from now on. It's a little inconvenient, but, you know, again, I don't want to be the guy that brings down the plane. Catch later.
Ha-ha. There you go. You don't want to be that guy. And finally, we have one from T. Morris about the
the lamb castration article they were talking about last week with Thomas. Craig, I don't know if you listened to last week's show.
Oh, I did.
Yeah, that was a real piece of work, wasn't it?
I know. I was like, how did this get in the show?
Hey, Chuck. Hey, Craig. And if Thomas Gideon is there. Hey, Thomas. It's T. I'm listening to Technorama. And Chuck, you were talking about episode 328, by the way. And, Chuck, you were talking about the guys that caught some sort of bacteria because they were castrating sheep with their teeth. Flashback, there was actually a few years ago an episode of Dirty Jobs where a sheep farmer had Mike Rowe do that. And I remember watching and thinking to myself, really? That's the only way? That, according to the sheep farmer, that was the best and most, quote-unquote, sanitary and safest way for both the sheep, particularly for the sheep, on castrating them. So, I don't know. It could have been those guys, and maybe nature finally caught up with them. But I just thought I'd share that with you. You can look it up. It's one of the previous episodes of Dirty Jobs. Micro castrates a sheep with his teeth. That's it. Talk to you later, guys. Bye.
Yeah, and see, I was waiting for my turn to actually bring that up because I was thinking the same thing. I went, oh, yeah, I've seen it. And sure enough, the farmer or herd or whatever, shepherd,
anyway, shepherd.
Whatever, he said Mike Rowe had this big, long spiel about how he talked to PETA and he talked to the Humane Society, and they had their recommendations on how to castrate a sheep, how to castrate a sheep or lamb humanely. But the farmer was like, that's a load of bunk, because if you do it the way they want you to, with rubber bands, you know, and have them fall off, it would, that sheep or lamb would be in agony for weeks. Yet, if they make a small incision and do this with their teeth and then tie it off, the sheep is up and walking around an hour.
Man, so. Sorry I missed that episode.
Well, thanks to the internet, you can relive it. But
you got to look at the webcam, too, because there's a great picture.
I mean, there's some things I cringe about on TV, and that was one of them.
Yep, that's why I put it in there. It just made me cringe. It's worst, the worst of the worst from Technorama.
And it's not even tech.
Yeah, why did you... Just to make people uncomfortable?
Absolutely. We haven't been there in a while.
Everybody's too comfortable. Let's stir the pot.
Exactly.
Let's move on. On this day in history for December 21st, 2011, it was on this date in 1620 that William Bradford and the Mayflower Pilgrims land on what is now known as Plymouth Rock in Plymouth, Massachusetts.
Arthur Wynn's Word Cross, the first crossword puzzle, is published in the New York World Today in 1913.
Also on this date in 1937, Snow White and the Seven Dwarves, the world's first full-length animated feature, premieres at the Carthay Circle Theater.
Today in 1967, Louis Washkanowski, I'll had it right in my head. The first man to undergo a heart transplant dies in Cape Town, South Africa, after living for 18 days after the transplant.
Apollo 8 is launched December 21st, 1968 from the Kennedy Space Center, placing its crew on a lunar trajectory for the first visit to another celestial body by humans.
Ooh. And 17 years ago today, Mexican volcano, the Popocatépetl.
Good try.
It was dormant for 47 years. Erupts and gases and ash go everywhere.
You somehow turned a Mexican volcano into something that sounded more Greek.
Or Italian, maybe.
Happy birthday goes out of the state to British chemist Thomas Graham, born today in 1805.
And also born today in 1890, geneticist and Nobel laureate Hermann Joseph Mueller is also born.
Actor Samuel L. Jackson turned 64.
That's not a good Samuel Jackson.
No.
And the
not.
Man who brought us The Lion King, Little Mermaid, Kung Fu Panda, and many other hit movies, film producer Jeffrey Katzenberg, turned 61.
And that's the way it was on this day in history for December 21st, 2011.
Impending news, everyone!
Is the Matrix coming your way? Can you do Matrix-style learning is coming where you plug in. I really want this. I've been thinking about putting a USB port in the back of my head anyway.
USB. USB's been obsolete now.
New research published today in the journal Science suggests that it may be possible to use brain technology to learn to play the piano, reduce mental stress, or hit a curveball with little or no conscious effort.
Wait a minute. Yes, duh. Use brain power to learn those things. Duh.
No, but you don't have to learn it the way you do. It's the kind of thing seen in the Hollywood's Matrix franchise. Experiments conducted at Boston University and ATR Computational Neuroscience Laboratories in Kyoto, Japan, recently demonstrated that through a person's visual cortex, researchers could use decoded functional magnetic resonance imaging, or fMRI, to induce brain activity patterns to match a previously known target state and thereby improve performance on visual tasks. Kind of sounds like, not so much the Matrix, sounds more like the...
traditional method.
No, on Chuck.
Intersect.
The Intersect.
No, but the way you're describing it, it sounds like using your eyes to learn. I'm like, yeah.
But they're using different visual image. Think of a person watching a computer screen and having his or her brain patterns modified to match those of a high-performing athlete or modified to recuperate from an accident or disease. Though preliminary researchers say such possibilities may exist in the future.
Again, I say duh.
Craig, I think you're taking this a little too simply. You're not thinking outside the box.
In the future, yeah. Actually, I bet Julie is working on this in college right now.
Oh, no, that's Sam, the biomedical engineer.
Yeah, she's the chemical engineer.
Oh.
Come on.
Well, there's some chemical in there.
No, it's MRIs. That's not chemical.
Okay. No, there's... okay.
Craig, now you're outside the box. Get back in.
Chemicals in your brain, man.
He
That's what
gets
I'm
outside
about.
The box and he just gets all uncomfortable and squishy. Yeah. You come out again, brain. I'm going to hit you with a crowbar.
That'd be my brain, yeah.
Speaking of crowbars, we have a special crowbar. We're not sure really why this was invented. This is one of those, yeah, it's cool, but what do you need it for?
Inventions. I know. I can answer this, but I'll let you talk about it first.
Okay.
I'll give you my analysis after.
This is a glow-in-the-dark crowbar. I'm curious as to why anybody would need to do demolition work in the dark. I mean, sure, it's called a glow bar, and it's cool and everything. Made out of high-carbon steel construction and silicate aluminum oxide-based powder coating, allowing it to glow 10 times more brightly than any other glowing compounds. I thought I was going to say any other glowing crowbars.
10 times as bright as your average crowbar.
Why? You know, you're not going to take apart your kitchen in the dark.
That's a stretch.
Is it for, whacking criminals in the middle of the night or something?
Okay, I'll tell you why. I'll tell you why they invented this.
And now, this is Craig's theory for criminal justice.
Well, it goes back to how films and science fiction and things like that imitate life. And just think of a horror movie. The climactic end, and the guy's scrambling for something to kill Jason Voorhees with, and there it is, in the dark, a glow-in-the-stick crowbar. Duh.
Is it glowing so he can see it?
Yeah, so he can grab it.
So the audience can see it.
For emphasis.
Right. Yeah. It's like when they do the close-up on the glass, and it's like, oh no, mm-hmm. that glass is somehow significant to what's coming up.
Right. Yeah, the major character can't see it, but you can. No.
Okay.
Well, see, so when Jason Voorhees or, whoever, could be Freddy Krueger incarnate.
I don't know if a crowbar could kill any of those guys.
It's worth a try.
Worth a try.
Yeah. Hey, I don't see a hammer.
There'll be a whole line of glow-in-the-dark tools. Yeah,
that's right.
Where's the glow-in-the-dark nail gun when you need it?
Soon you'll be able to do all your work in the dark with the glow-in-the-dark Craftsman tool set.
Ah, the next Star Trek. They're going to have a glow-in-the-dark phaser.
Probably.
I'm full. Hey, I got answers for everything.
Okay, yeah, I'm sure you do. They're not always right. They're kind of Cliff Clavin.
You're full of it, all right.
Cliff Clavin. Turning to the Remember When, we have, from history, 10 intrepid animal astronauts. These are 10 astronauts that have gone up in space that you may never have known about. Number 10, fruit flies. That's right. Fruit flies are always up in space. They're one of the most interesting. The Astroflies rocket was launched to an altitude of 68 miles way back in 1947 aboard a V-2. And of course, who could forget Laika, the dog that the Russians sent up? Dogs have been in space. They're number 9. What's number 8, Julie?
Cats. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Cats have been in space. The Soviets weren't the only ones to send them up, though. In 1963,
I think that cat on the stamp is smiling just a little bit.
It is. That's because he's French.
Cat. He's French.
He's not a cat. He's a chat.
Meowee.
It's spelled C-H-A-T. We have a cat room.
Chat's room.
Number 7. A lot of people's favorite. Spiders. The first arachnids in space were European garden spiders named Arabella and Anita. They named them.
And spiders prove that no one in space can hear you scream.
Where there are spiders, there must be frogs. Because that's what's next. Number 6 is frogs. 1970, NASA launched its orbiting frog Otolith spacecraft.
Hey, and the slowest launch was
the Russian tortoise. Number 5. What was that, Julie?
I think the spiders and frogs were sent up to double check and see if people still had the same fears in space.
They had to go up because the old woman swallowed a spider.
See if they still looked icky in zero G.
Houston, yes, I'm still scared of spiders and frogs.
I know an old cosmonaut who swallowed a spider, but I don't know why she swallowed a spider.
She swallowed the spider to catch the fruit fly.
I don't know why she swallowed a fruit fly. Perhaps she'll die. This is starting to sound like that song.
On the IAS?
Wait, it's a Russian tortoise. Guess who sent it up?
America?
The Russians. Duh.
No, not the Russians, the Soviet Union. They were still the Soviet Union.
Hey, we can make a rocket. I've got 2 Russian tortoises downstairs.
Really?
Yes, I do.
Number 4 is rabbits. You want to hear a dirty joke? 2 rabbits went into space, 3 came back.
Oh.
Number 3, newts.
Wait a minute. They got it sitting there. They got the rabbit sitting there with like a dog or something. I don't understand the picture, but
it's the only picture of the rabbit they could get before he went off into space. Number 2, chimpanzees. We're all familiar with that. That was very controversial. And number 1,
water bears.
They're actually known as tardigrades. But why would you ever go by tardigrade when you can go by water bear? These water-dwelling microorganisms have 8 legs measuring less than 1.5 millimeters in length and are, all things considered, probably the hardiest creatures we've ever sent into space. Case in point, in September 2007, water bears were launched into low Earth orbit on the ESA's Photon M3 mission, where they were exposed to the intense radiation and vacuum of space for 10 days. When the water bears returned to Earth and rehydrated, 68% of them revived. That was a 32% fallout rate. Poor water bears.
Well, vacuum of space. Give them a break.
Poor
water
bears.
That's better than 50%, so I say it's a success.
Yeah. D plus, right?
Let's send them on all our space missions. Speaking of space, computer space, the old video game that we saw at the Computer History Museum.
Yes.
Computer space now turns 40.
And there's the picture of the lady in the evening gown.
That's right. The one we said we never, ever, ever saw anybody like that at a video arcade.
Yeah, that's right. Oh, we only dreamed she would show up.
Right. The one they had at the physical one they had at the Computer History Museum was green and glittery. Not the lady, the game.
Although either one been acceptable.
Right. It was November of 1971 that Nolan Bushnell, Ted Dabney, and computer space officially ushered in the era of video game. Before running off to start Atari, the two men created the world's first coin-op video arcade cabinet, and indeed, the first commercial video game ever, a full 6 months before the Odyssey. Computer Space was a relatively simple title in which the player used four buttons to pilot a ship around a screen and do battle with flying saucers. The mechanics and graphics should be familiar to anyone who has ever tried to their hand at Asteroids. In fact, it's essentially Asteroids without the titular space debris. Technologizer has a rather fascinating and in-depth look at the pioneering game, tracing its evolution all the way back to the 1962 DEC PDP-1 tech demo.
And that would be the technologizer.com.
Computer Space. Not a good marketing name, though.
It doesn't sound like...
And then I want to say it's kind of a weird shape to that cabinet.
It is. It looks like an old 1960s robot, but well,
that's to make it look cool.
Futuristic.
Yeah.
Meet George Jetson.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like that. What was the other thing? The kitchen recipe machine.
Oh yeah, that orange thing with all the like flip desk. Tabs. It had like register operators and operands on it, and I'm like, really? Put in your recipe and it will tell you what to do.
And the square root of your measurements.
Pi R square.
Pi R not square.
We're going to take a quick break and be right back in the media corner. Strange units of measure.
This is very bizarre.
Go is 180 millimeters. A pack year is a cigarette consumption based on one pack a day for a year.
Oh, for crying out loud.
A nibble, typically 4 bits of binary code or half a byte.
Now, I knew that one.
Score, that's 20 of something. A hand, 4 inches of horse height.
Now, wait a minute. So you measure a horse in hands. Do you measure a donkey in butts?
No, a donkey is an ass. A TWIP is 1/20th of a typesetting point.
Wow, I didn't know that one.
This is TWIP, this week in podcasting.
Don't forget about a thrave, which is 24 sheaves of wheat.
Bring in the sheaves, bring in the sheaves.
A shake is 10 nanoseconds.
Yeah, that's like when you're going to detox.
Look, they're shaking at this certain 10 nanosecond frequency.
Yeah, whatever.
A Mickey is a ratio of computer mouse movements to on-screen cursor movement.
Knew that one.
A Jansky is a strength of radio signals from space.
Long time ago.
A butt is 2 hogs' heads or about 126 gallons of boo.
I didn't know that one either.
And smoot is a measure of length developed by some MIT students equal to 5 feet 7 inches, the height of Oliver R. Smoot.
It'll be over in just a moment.
This is Clinton from Comedy Forecast, and you're listening to Technorama. Shame on you.
Welcome to Blockhead Video.
Hey, where can I find some good information about music and TV and videos and things?
Over here, in the media corner.
Hey, Chuck. I have to say, I was on the DragonCon website.
Yes?
And you know over in the right-hand side, there's a little block where they show at the con.
Yeah.
Like pictures. Well, I'm sitting here looking. I just happened to be on the website looking at the guest list. All of a sudden, I went, oh, there's Clinton holding a parsec. I think I don't know which one it was for. I think he was. Hey, I was like, hey, wait a minute. Where's our picture?
Presenting.
No, he was. Maybe he was taken. Maybe they took it when.
Or it was from a previous year.
Something like that.
Okay. We have one thing in the media corner. We have George Takei wants to unite Star Trek and Star Wars fans against.
Oh my.
Oh my. Twilight.
Well, sure.
The short video, about 5 minutes long, starts out with the old William Shatner versus Carrie Fisher debate about what's better, Star Wars or Star Trek, and what came first,
and
kind of stuff.
That Shatner and Carrie Fisher have been actually going back and forth,
right?
A couple of times this last few weeks.
Well, George says, people, put aside your bickering. We must unite against sparkling vampires. There's far worse things out there in battle.
Vampires don't sparkle.
No, it was more along the lines of all heroism is gone. The main point in this story is, does my boyfriend like me?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, oh, that was hilarious.
So Julie has read the Twilight series and seen
really
the movies.
I really enjoyed it, yeah.
Okay.
But it was still funny. Gotta admit. talking so seriously, it cracked me up.
Did we even see any Twilight characters at DragonCon?
Wait a minute. So you enjoyed the humor in it rather than the story itself?
No, this video.
The video.
Oh, the video. I'm sorry. I thought you were talking about the book series. Okay. Well. Yeah, so he was being all serious about it. Yeah.
Did we even see any Twilight characters at Dragon Con?
Oh, Dragon Con. You know, I don't remember any, and I don't remember seeing any in any of the pictures.
Kyle says they were there.
Hey, really?
Yeah.
They may have been, but
you may not have recognized them.
I wouldn't have recognized them because I hadn't seen any of the movies.
So. Really?
Yeah, really.
Saw the trailers.
I probably seen a couple of trailers. Well, I seen that one kid with his shirt off. Good Lord.
Kyle, are you admitting you've seen them? The movies? One other thing. I have one thing in the What
nope.
the Chuck. He's denying it yeah, vehemently. We have... He's got pictures. He went around taking pictures of just about everybody at Dragon Con. One thing in What the Chuck. All right, I'm going to play it.
What the Chuck? What's up with that?
Hey, you may not want to drink Mountain Dew after hearing this one. There's flame retardant in Mountain Dew. Yes.
What?
Yes. Mountain Dew, along with 10% of sodas in the U.S., contain brominated vegetable oil, or BVO, which is a flame retardant chemical banned in Europe and Japan. The flame retardant BVO is currently listed as an ingredient in various citrus soft drinks such as Mountain Dew, Squirt, Fanta, Orange, Sunkist, Pineapple, Gatorade, Thirst Quencher Orange, Powerade, Strawberry Lemonade, and Fresca Original Citrus. But why and what for? According to the Environmental Health News, BVO contains bromine atoms, which weigh down the citrus flavoring so it mixes with the sugar water instead of floating to the top.
Wait, Julie, do you get all this?
Yeah, yeah, bromine, molecular weight 72.
Wow, very good. I hear you.
Basically, BVO gives soda more consistent flavoring. That sounds good. But BVO is also added to polystyrene foam cushions in furniture and plastics in electronics because BVO can slow down chemical reactions that cause a fire. Is that what we want to be drinking?
I don't drink it anymore.
I knew bromine was... like in these plastics on computer stuff? Mm-hmm. They start out white and then they kind of turn yellow?
Well, if you go by that logic, water is in is used in the production of styrofoam and in putting out fires.
What did you call it? Dihydrogen
monoxide.
Ooh, sounds scary.
Doesn't it?
But I should show this article to one of the guys at college. He's actually called Mountain Dew Mike.
Now you can call him BVO Mike.
And you can't set him on fire.
Oh, yeah, good point.
There's a quote in here. It says, after a few extreme soda binges, not too far from what many gamers regularly consume, a few patients have needed medical attention for skin lesions, memory loss, and nerve disorders, all symptoms of overexposure to bromine. Other studies suggest that BVO... could be building up in human tissues just like other brominated compounds such as flame retardants. In mouse studies, big doses cause reproductive and behavioral problems. Most gamers have behavioral problems anyway.
And this isn't helping. My brother drinks a lot of Mountain Dew, and you know what? This actually answers a lot of questions.
Stop,
is it cause or effect, though?
Both.
Tim Elliott in the chat room says, shouldn't have had that 5-gallon big gulp. Yeah. If it's the 5-gallon one, it's the 5-gallon bladder, buddy.
Hey, just return it. Got your receipt?
I still have 3.5 gallons left.
Yeah. Hey, remember that the thing you put together about the Monty Python thing, Burn the Geek?
Mm-hmm.
Well, if he's drinking all this Mountain Dew, you wouldn't be able to burn him.
No.
Oh.
Throw him off the cliff!
He won't stay lit!
Ergo, he's not a geek.
If he bursts into flames, he's a geek. All right, speaking of geeks, we have the Geek Library. First up in the Geek Library, we have the Internet Justice League. This is a series of pictures that we must show. It's what if the Internet had a Justice League? So we've got, first of all, Captain Google here at the top.
Yeah.
Says, an overpowered hero with a near infinite amount of abilities. Everyone relies on him more than they should, while secretly hoping he'll never flip out and use his powers for evil. What are his powers? Way too many to ever use. His nemesis? Yahoo!
Yeah, looks like Bizarro.
It kind of does. He's lifting a weight that says 100 terabytes on it.
Here, I'll take the next one. His costume, he has two little thumbs up where the ears are, but it's the Facebook, an eccentric young billionaire who runs a company used by basically everyone. He is well-liked, but his methods of preserving peace and privacy are somewhat questionable. His powers, a utility belt full of news feeds, sidebars, and other pointless gadgets. His nemesis is 4chan and Tumblr.
4chan and Tumblr. They should have used somebody instead of looking like Batman, who probably looked more like a shapeshifter because he keeps changing his interface.
Oh.
Number three is Reddit. Reddit uses different arrows to enforce his own twisted brand of internet justice. In the town of Content City, he decides who lives and who dies. His powers are the ability to run any meme into the ground in under a day. His nemesis? Stumble upon.
That's funny. And the next one is Huffington Post, a strong independent hero who, despite being knowledgeable and well-respected, isn't really anyone's favorite. Powers, a lasso that can hastily grab snippets of news from all over the internet. Nemesis, cheeseburger.
Cheeseburger.
I can't have cheeseburger. I don't know.
Julie, you want to take this one?
Next up is Amazon, powered by the green energy of people with no willpower and lots of money. Amazon is able to conjure up any good or product imaginable. Powers, draining bank accounts, super saver shipping. Nemesis, Craigslist.
That's funny.
And finally, we have Google Plus. Google Plus, a hero, despite being good intentioned and noble, is generally thought to be worthless and kind of dumb.
No.
Powers, same as the Facebook, just watered down. Nemesis, the Facebook. And then there's a little circle with Nemesis with the Facebook in it. I'm not your nemesis, man. Leave me alone.
Yeah.
That pretty much does it for the end. We have, we have two games. Two of the nerdiest
Chuck,
games
I've
ever
seen.
You always
like to skip over stuff in the
show.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah. Well, we are skipping over the stuff for your stocking. We're not going to be playing those songs, but...
Okay, that's fine.
Oh my gosh. This looks like a fun game.
The board game or the card game?
Oh, I see the board game.
Yeah, I see the board game too. It's called. There's one called C-Jump, which is a board game that teaches you how to do programming. So you have little pieces that look like they're sorry pieces. And you move around, you roll your dice, and if you land on things like X plus 2, you know, you figure out what your variable is. And if X is less than 3, you go this way, and if it's not, you go that way. So you learn about conditional statements with ifs and switches. And, you know, that in a strange way, that's almost how I picture code. It's a very visually abstract way of doing things, but I see, you know, blocks of code or functions or procedures and things in boxes, and inside those boxes are more details, but you can just close the box and put inputs in and get outputs out.
You know how I see code? I'll tell you, when people are saying, oh, I want this program to do this, 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 and this, and this. Oh, yeah, we want to do this. You know, they're giving me these, what they want.
Yeah.
And in my mind, I'm thinking procedural, like you used to write BASIC from start to finish. Straight
through.
You're
not supposed to do that?
But you know what? That's fine. But I look at that, right? I'm not saying I do it. I'm just saying that's the way I think of it at first. And then I start... seeing as I'm starting to write, I'm like, oh, well, I can reuse this kind of thing and I'll make a class for this or that and, you know, and start or a function or whatever, you know, and start breaking it out. But that's how I see it. It's procedural right off the bat.
You're not supposed to be thinking of the solution first. You're supposed to listen to all the requirements and ask questions and get more and more and more information.
Well,
as
I'm
much
not saying
as, you
as they're speaking. I'm just saying as I look at the stuff that they told me, I'm like, and I'm thinking straight through, but then I start working on it and it starts breaking out.
I always throw questions back at them and it drives them nuts. What do you want to do? You know, they say, well, we're going to send it
function?
Off. Send it off for approval to the manager. Okay, what if they reject it? Oh, well, can we get the company name from the server we list? Okay, what do you want to do if there's more than one server and they're associated with different companies? Oh,
yeah.
Like, that's what I'm there for, because those cases will come up. Oh, mm-hmm. Well, we never have to worry about that. It'll never happen that they have different companies. Oh, technically they can.
Oh, you know what? Never, never state an absolute like that.
Right, right.
You're asking for it.
Customers do. We can't, you know what? That'll never happen. It's like,
you know what?
You
I've heard
it?
That a million times. That'll never happen. And then all of a sudden, about 6 months later, hey, can we make this do this? Like,
wait, I have to play this back. I got it on my phone. You said it'll never happen.
Yeah, right.
So we didn't include it in the functional specification.
Hey, and I saved your voicemail. Listen to this.
It will never happen.
Anyway, here's an absolute for you. Instead of it never will happen, it will always happen.
That's right.
Yeah, there's your absolute.
We have one other, it's a Kickstarter project called CPU Wars. It's a card game where this guy has been saving up information and specifications from different CPUs, everything from old CPUs right on up to the modern stuff. I'm not sure exactly how you play this thing, but it looks kind of fun. It's a card game in the style of Magic the Gathering, but it's a lot more geeky, and it will actually teach you about CPUs, or at least some of their capabilities. Hey, take a look at the show notes. There's a couple other things I left in there for your stocking. One is Chewbacca singing Silent Night, which Julie has heard, and it's mildly entertaining. Play it for your family. Drive them out of the house. It's a great time. And Dance of the Sugar Plum Fairies on a glass harp. You know that game you play when you're sitting at the dinner table with a glass half full of water and you run your finger around the edge and it makes a tone? They've got all these glasses lined up, and there's two people playing Dance of the Sugar Plum Fairies by Tchaikovsky. It's really beautiful. Go take a listen. And if you really want to put yourself to sleep, there's the 24 hours of ambient Enterprise D noise as it just kind of cruises along through space. No other background noise, just that
good
gentle
stuff,
humming.
Good stuff.
All good stuff. We're not going to play them for you here today because we're running out of time. We are at the end of the show. And I should remind you that this is the last show of the year. Much apologies. We will be on Christmas break and then New Year break. So the next time you'll hear from us, if you're listening live, will be January 8th. Otherwise, podcast will be on January 11th. So until then, Merry Christmas, Happy New Year, Hanukkah, Kwanzaa, whatever else is out there. You know, we're all celebrating. Have a good time. Be nice to each other. And wish your nerdy friends a binary high five.
Thank you. Hey, and I want to thank everybody for listening for this last year. And
Festivus.
I certainly appreciate it. Yes, and thank you for the Parsec.
Yes, thank you very much. It's been a wonderful year. Lots of blessings. If you go over to our homepage, you can check that out. I posted on Twitter and Facebook and stuff. Link to a family homepage that's got that good stuff in it.
I read it already.
Yeah, you read it. We appreciate you giving us all your time. We want to hear from you, though. While we're off, we will be collecting voicemail and email. Glad to hear from Will the Computer Guy and T. Morris. And thanks for joining us, Julie. We know by the time we're back on the air, you're going to be back at school.
Yeah.
How'd your first semester go?
It went well. There was lots of learning and lots of adventures.
Lots of adventures. Now, next semester, Michigan Tech is having its famous Winter Carnival.
Yes.
Ooh, if you haven't gone to one of those and you happen to be in the Midwest, try and get over to Michigan Tech. I know it's a long haul for just about everybody because it's at the end of the world. It's not the end of the world, but you can see it from there.
It's right over there.
It's about it.
Hmm. Hey, Julie.
Yeah?
You know, I've been watching that show Breaking Bad. Have you seen that? Heard about it?
Heard about it.
You know, it got me interested in chemistry. Think you can give me a couple of tips after?
I've probably forgotten it.
Forgotten it.
And on that note.
All right, fine.
Special thanks to Mad Marv for great blog content during the week. If you're not going over to the website or subscribe to the RSS feed, you should. There's a lot of good stuff showing up there, and Craig and I are always putting things on there, too. Ustream, who provides our modest live stream content, at least for the remainder of the year. We're still working on options there. And our chat room provided by thinstack.net. Thank you to Steve Riekeberg and all the people over at thinstack.net who keep our live chat room going. Join us on Sunday night if you happen to be around 9:30 Eastern time. We'd love to see you there and hear from you in the chat room and the voicemail 206-222-CHAT 206-222-2428. Or email us if you're too far away from the U.S. Send it to technorama@chuckchat.com. We'll play it in the show. Until next time, tell a friend about Technorama and give us a binary high five. Julie!
101.
All I want for Christmas is my 101.